Welcome, everybody. Tonight, we have a special treat. We're going to hear from Fran. Fran's going to talk to us about retreat she went on earlier this month. So I'm just going to turn it over to her and let her come up here and closer to the mic.
So I went to the Springwater Center for Meditative Inquiry, and I found this place in a Google search. I searched for a silent meditation retreat in upstate New York because I had planned to do a Vipassana, a 10-day Vipassana retreat, and then I didn't get in. And so I found the website for this place, and it looked beautiful, 200 acres, woods, hills, trails, and they said no rituals, no dogma. So I thought I'd rather err on that side than too much ritual, too much dogma, because there are a lot of Zen meditation centers in upstate New York. A lot of them came up on the search too. But I just sort of decided to go with this place. I really didn't know very much about it at all, and it just felt like the right thing to do. The day I left, I got up at 3:30 in the morning. I was supposed to fly out at 6 so I could get there before the retreat started and settle in and get grounded. I'd never been there before, and so it felt great that I was going to get there early, but then my flight didn't happen the way it was supposed to. So I ended up having to arrive late after the retreat started, after the orientation. And so they showed me my room real quick and kind of ushered me in, and I felt kind of disjointed. I didn't even know where the bathroom was or anything. So I was very frazzled to start the retreat. And I didn't even sleep that well that night. But the next day was like completely different. They woke us up at 5:30 with a bell, and we started sitting at 6. The sits were very similar to here at 25 minutes and then a 7-minute walk. And so we had an hour and a half session, and then I got some breakfast and headed outside. And I sat down at a little picnic table because we were supposed to sit separated out. And it was my first chance to look around, and the meditation center's up on a hill, and there's fields of wildflowers and beautiful trees, and the whole thing was so gorgeous. And I just sat there with my breakfast like, wow, I did it. I'm here. It's so beautiful. The air was so fresh and clear. I really was starting to settle in. And then I noticed about 10 feet in front of me was a bird feeder. And bird watching is one of my interests. I looked around. It was the only bird feeder in the area. And I had sat right in front of it. And I sort of took that as a sign that things were going to unfold in the way that I hoped. And also, I noticed right with that breakfast, it just felt natural to eat slow. Like at home, I'm the kind of person, I eat fast. I'm usually one of the first ones done. It wasn't even something I thought about. It just sort of naturally happened, and I could feel myself just settling in, my heart opening. It felt so good to be there. And I really loved the energy of it. And that night at 9:30, they rang the bell. The last sit was over. And I felt energized, and I'm a very early to bed person. Like on Wednesday evenings, I walk the dog and I go right to bed when I get home. But here it was 9:30, and nothing in my body hurt from sitting all day. I felt so balanced. I felt so alive. I was like, wow, what a great first day. You know, it's not going to get better than this, but of course it did. It was a very magical week for me. I felt like my mind got so clear, the anxieties I live with at home, the anger, that just all the challenges seemed to be smoothed out, like they were ironed out. My mind just got into a whole different mode. And I've done quite a few silent meditation retreats. I've done some 10-day Vipassana retreats. There's a man named S.N. Goenka who has started teaching he's actually dead now, but he started opening centers all around the planet, and they don't call their retreats, they call them courses. It's a 10-day course, and they teach you Vipassana insight meditation techniques, and those retreats are very strict. They take your phone when you get there, so you're not tempted to go on it. They ask you not to read, not to write. You're basically supposed to sit, eat, sleep, and maybe rest on a few breaks that there are. It's a very rigorous schedule. So that was kind of what I was used to. At Springwater, everything's optional except for a work period in the morning. So one of the interesting things about this retreat is people would come and go. Like some people would show up for sitting some of the times, other times they wouldn't. During the walking meditation, sometimes people would just sit down somewhere or, you know, just take off and come back before the end. So the energy was very different in that way. And so I just started to watch my mind with it and the preconceived ideas of, oh, it's better to have everybody following one way and creating a sense. Because like the first Vipassana retreat I went on, there were 100 people. So I have 50 men on one side and 50 women on the other. And you had to go to the sittings. It was mandatory. They would even come get you in your bed if you tried to sleep through them. But it does create a certain energy. Like if you have 100 people in the meditation hall, hour after hour, sitting, all focusing on the same technique, there's a container. At least that's what it feels like to me. Like there's a container that holds you in your practice. And even sometimes I would almost feel like I was holding onto a raft in the water, just being in a hall like that with that many people in that way. So this retreat center was definitely much looser, and they were not very big on teaching techniques at all. The center was started by a woman named Toni Packer, and she had been involved with a large Zen center in Rochester, New York. This place was like an hour outside of Rochester. And she broke away from that group because she wanted to move away from the structure of Zen. She felt that what she was seeing as she moved up the ranks and became one of the head teachers was that people were focusing too much on technique of where to have their hands, where they're sitting, where to have their hands when they're walking, you know, all the rules to follow. And the teacher was the one who would judge people and move them up to higher and higher levels in the student hierarchy. And she dreamed of having a center where everyone was equal. So even when she was there and she was the head teacher at the retreats, she would never want to be called teacher. She wanted everyone to be on the same level. She would say to people, I'm not any more enlightened than you are. We're all the same. And she's very into this egalitarian kind of setting. And in the beginning, they did keep some of the Zen traditions, but as the years went on, she felt more and more that she really just wanted people to focus on the present moment, using all their senses to be in the present, and that's what will take you forward in your practice. So the teacher during the week that I was there, really mostly during his talks, he talked about when he was at the Zen Center and when they started this place, and he kind of told some stories, but I didn't think it was that helpful. So since there were no rules about reading, I went to the library and I got out some of Toni Packer's books, and I felt like they were amazing. And the way that she talked about meditation was very similar to the way that I first learned, because I came to meditation through yoga, and the kind of yoga that I was doing, we would focus on meditation through the body, you know, since we'd be doing our postures, and after the postures, you would sit and you'd feel everything going on in your body. You'd be watching what goes on in your mind, always about awareness, very deep levels of awareness. And Toni Packer talked about it in the same way. And she talked about going through periods of great emotional challenge, like grieving and different processes like that, by just being in the moment, one moment at a time, and just watching, observing. And she talked a lot about how we have expectations even before we sit on a cushion. You know, so if she was here, she'd be saying, like, when you came in tonight, did you have an expectation of what the sit would be like for you? Did you have some preconceived ideas about what tonight might like be like for you? And she just always encouraged people to be aware of those and come back to the moment of what's going on. And most of the time they had the windows to the meditation room open. There were a couple of days when it got warmer and they put the AC on, and there were almost always birds singing. And it was interesting because Toni talked about that a lot in her book, that when you hear a bird singing, that could be a signal to come back into the present moment. As your mind wandered, are you thinking about something else? Are you already thinking about lunch or whatever's going to happen? And you know, what are you smelling? What are you feeling? Just a very sensual experience. So it kind of reminded me of the roots in yoga very much. And I really liked her books. She was born in the 20s in Germany, and her mother was Jewish. Her father wasn't. And so when the Nazis took over, it was a very scary time for her as a child. Her father was a scientist, and the Nazis felt that they needed some of his work. So they allowed her family to stay at their home. But the way she described it, all around her was chaos. There was a lot of death. And then toward the end of the war, of course, Germany was being bombed like crazy. So she had this very terrifying, unstable childhood. And so you just got this impression when she spoke about emotional challenges through sitting, like she really knew what she was talking about after all that she went through in her childhood in basic, very formative years. So I was very inspired by her. And I really hadn't done any research about the teacher that was going to be there that week. So it was fine. I didn't make any meetings with him or anything. This retreat also had one thing that I had never experienced before. They had a 1-hour group in the afternoon where you could talk about questions that came up during your practice or experiences that you were having, things like that. And the first couple of days I didn't say anything because I feel like silence is what gets me to such a deeper space. Not talking, not thinking about people's answers. There's just something for me that is so freeing from my mind. But like the third day or something, I noticed people kind of looking at me. And because I came late, I didn't have a chance to meet anyone before silence. So I knew they were kind of like, she's the only one that's not talking. So I sort of tried to come up with a few things to say. But if I went back, I might even skip that group. A lot of people were really struggling with the silence and struggling with their practice and getting stuck in thoughts or getting stuck in things from the past. And so they used the group to speak and, you know, about those types of things. But I don't know, for me, everything just dropped away. And that's what it just felt like every day, more and more just dropped away. I woke up in the mornings feeling so clear and so happy to be there and so excited to start the day. Like, if I did sleep to the bell, the minute the bell went off, I would be out of bed, just so energized and so happy. And Toni talked a lot in her books about how at the end of every silent meditation retreat, the participants would say to her, how do you take this home? Like, I want to bring this home. And she would talk about not grasping, you know, of not trying to hold on to what happened at retreat, because that's not what's going on in the moment. And once you leave, it's each moment, wherever you are, it's each moment, and not holding on to the past and just knowing that it will come with you in its own way and it will unfold over time. So I'm trying to work with that, but it's definitely been challenging. And I just love retreats. If you haven't been on one, I really recommend it if you can take the time to get away. I went through a period with a career change and was unemployed or only partially employed. And so that's when I did a lot of retreats. I did 4 or 5 of the 10-day Goenka retreats. So that's it.
So it sounds like you were really ready for this, and it was, you know, with all your past experience and being a meditator already and having been through what you've been through, you were ready for this experience. So good for you. Sounds like it was wonderful. And what to take away from it is that that's who you are.
Toni talked a lot about in her books about how when we're immersed in the moment, that's when we feel the mind of humanity. that we're all one mind. And it kind of reminded me, I don't know if any of you are familiar with Stephen Levine. He wrote A Gradual Awakening. And he talked about the one heart that we all share. She called it a mind, but to me, it feels more like a heart. It's a pretty amazing feeling.
I quite often call what we call mind, heart mind.
Yeah.
You know, because every time we label something, we comes up with concepts.
Right, and it becomes limiting.
It becomes limiting. So she sounds like my kind of person.
Yeah.
Because I'm very similar in my approach to things, too.
So, yes, I thought so. Definitely.
Yeah. So cool.
Yeah, very interesting.
Well, thank you so much for sharing.
I just had a comment about it. I like the idea that approach to the not so much the ritual stuff, simply because it allows people to practice in a way that feels comfortable for them. You know, like when you're first getting started in Zen, sometimes like an hour and a half is intimidating. And if that's their first time doing a retreat, they may, you know what I mean? Like it may not feel comfortable to them yet. So giving them the option to get up, to go do other things, to take those breaks, it's more inclusive, really.
Well, yes and no. It all depends. Every situation is different. Every person is different.
Yeah.
Some people, let them have their way and they're stuck.
Right.
Because their way is always being stuck. You have to be challenged. You can't get up in the middle and go get a cigarette. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there are limits to allowing people to do whatever they want.
Right.
And so whoever's directing the retreat, whoever's has a responsibility to keep things together and to hold that energy that she was talking about.
Yeah.
You know, there's an energy that's created, and someone going their own route can be disruptive. So you do have sittings, you do hit a bell, you do sit for a certain period of time, you do a walking meditation for a certain period of time, and instruction can be really useful and helpful.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't recommend the spring water for somebody who's brand new to meditation. I think it's really good for people who have a foundation. But if somebody was brand new, I would tell them even to do one of the 10-day Vipassana retreats that I did, where they're very focused on technique. It's very structured. So if people are floundering in the beginning, I think structure can be helpful. So you can move through in a different way. And, you know, and once you have that under your belt, then I think having more of a sense of freedom is good. Like there were two artists in my group, like, and actually the woman sitting in front of me was gone a lot. And that kind of bothered me because she was like right in front of me. So every time I'd sit down, I'd see the empty cushion. But she was spending the entire summer there. She went up in June for a retreat and loved it so much. And she just retired. So she decided to stay for the summer. So she was also working on her artwork. So when she would feel inspired and creative, she would just be painting. And after she told me that at the end, then I realized how interesting it was, my judgments looking at the empty cushion in front of me. And here she was creating incredible paintings.
Yeah, so she was using it for her own retreat in a different way.
Yes.
So there is a purpose to going on retreat. You had your reason for going, she had hers.
Yeah.
Everybody has theirs.
Yeah.
But ultimately, solving the problem of birth and death, the great problem we don't want to face in ourselves, the things that she was referring to in her books.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the pain, the suffering. So that's why retreats are important. It's not to have a good time.
Yeah, no, I understand. I just, like I said, I like that aspect of it where they, you know, go paint or do some other things too to help them. A different way to meditate, I guess.
You're saying the only way to face that is to just sit.
No, I think painting faces that too. I'm just saying that you come to a retreat with expectations. If you're a beginner and you've never done it before, I'm just agreeing with what Fran said, that I think more structure in the beginning is really helpful. Once you understand what it is you're doing on the cushion, then you're free to move.
What you're saying also brings back to me the importance of having a good teacher, because it's kind of like a kid in the beginning, right? Like, that's kind of how I, when you were talking about it, I'm like, okay, that makes sense. That's what I would do for my kids, right? With some practice and some guidance. Okay, you want to go paint a painting now. I trust you to do that, but not at the beginning.
The discomfort you feel, why you feel the discomfort, and once you know, and some people could use the regimen as for something to kind of hold on to, because it is difficult. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I wouldn't call it really stages, but there kind of are stages to your process of understanding self. Mm-hmm. And part of that process is facing that discomfort. And once you're beyond, she didn't have any trouble sitting. She didn't have any pain. The pain comes from where? Mostly from your mind. I mean, the body has pain too, sure. But the body-mind connection is very real. Mm-hmm. And she has experience. I mean, yoga, I loved what she said about yoga, because, you know, that paying attention to your body. And Zen is that. Sitting properly in Zen is total body experience. It is not somewhere else. You know, it's, you're feeling everything. You're sensing everything. You're in touch with everything. You're hearing the bird, hearing the thunder, the lightning, the cicadas, the cars going by, you know, all of it. You're not missing a thing.
That's what it is. I had an alertness that I normally wouldn't have. I don't even know how else to describe it, but it wasn't like a kind of meditation where you just zone out and then the bell rings. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks. It's helpful for me. I feel like I'm still in this big integration process.
You're doing great. And thank you so much for sharing that. That was really wonderful. I got a lot out of it. So thank you.
Good. Thank you for asking me.
Yeah. Well, just a reminder, everybody, we can't, unfortunately, do several day retreats here. But we do have a retreat coming up for one whole day. A retreat in nature, November 15th, again, at Myakka River State Park. It was a wonderful retreat last time you were there.
Yes, it was wonderful.
So we're going to do that again. And we'll try to do it a couple times a year at least. All right. Any other questions or thoughts tonight?
Well, have you ever taught technique?
Sure.
Yeah. I feel like all the times we've come here, you've never really discussed technique.
Yeah, well, I guess I should have mentioned it more often that I'm available for that. I do to begin, if I know somebody's a beginner and they need some instruction, you know, I'm sort of traditional in the Zen way that way. You have to come to the gate. Mm-hmm. You have to knock on the door and really be sincere about wanting it. So if you want advice, mm-hmm. you know, don't expect me to just come over there and give it to you. You better come ask for it. But that's, you know, but I'm available. I mean, if I can help, I help, of course. I also don't claim to be some expert that knows everything. So
I think a refresher on techniques would be nice for me personally.
All right.
I don't know about that. Oh, me too. Yeah. I kind of feel like there's times when I can lock in, but there's also times where I'm just like zoning out.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I think that's really good. I need refreshers. So, you know.
Well, that's a nice thing about retreat too, because we can get into like this habitual way of practicing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, even just the one day retreat, I feel like the one day retreats are kind of a recharge and a new perspective.
Yeah. I wanted to be more clear about what it is that we do, that, because I think when you really sit well, it doesn't matter whether you call it Zen or not, but techniques can vary according to your, like, breath is a really important thing. So some people watch breath, some people count breath, some people do a mantra to breath, some people just sit. Just sitting is the hardest one.
Yeah.
Because you can zone out, become, you know, next thing you know, you're not sitting, you know, you're somewhere else. So just sitting is doing what Fran was talking about, being in that place where you're so aware, alert, completely awake. That's different than sitting and kind of daydreaming and falling asleep.
Now, what she's talking about is a rare one.
Well, that's...
Yeah, it happens.
See, I mean, I hate to call it advanced because some people can do it easier than others.
Yeah.
But...
And at different times, it's different.
Yeah.
Also,
yeah.
We go through so many different places in our lives. You know, we're under more stress or some, you know, something's going on or we're going through a loss or...
Yeah, so sometimes just sitting means just sitting. Sometimes it means, you know, you're emotionally or physically unable to get to where you need to be. So you get on the train of the mantra.
Yeah.
And that sort of helps you to, or you watch the breath. You know, one of the things that people really should not ignore is that this is deep diaphragmatic breathing. Somebody who's done yoga, Raja Yoga, and really dive deeply into yoga, understand breath, because that's one of the things you have to know to be really good at yoga. In Zen, they just kind of mention it casually, but it's very serious. It's an important aspect of sitting. You're supposed to breathe like you're breathing deeply in your stomach. And we call it tantien, a couple inches below your belly button. You should really be centered there during the whole time. If you center there, then you're just sitting.
Funny you mentioned that because I've had to go to physical therapy because of all the stuff I've had going on. And that's actually the first thing they teach is how to diaphragmatically breathe. So like you are not able to make it through any physical therapy if you can't breathe through it.
Yeah.
So they make you do, well, at least the place I went to.
That's interesting.
She makes you learn how to breathe for the first session. She's like, we're not gonna touch your leg. We're gonna breathe.
So, you know, if you're really paying attention and you're in a place of stress, you'll recognize that your breath is up in your chest and then you break it back down.
Yeah.
So sometimes, you know, just sitting means noticing where you are and bringing it back. So that's all. It's, you know, it's just paying attention ultimately, but you don't realize you're not paying attention. You see, that's the tricky part. But once you stop identifying, stop being attached to your thinking as though that's who you are. You're already way ahead of the game because now you already see, I'm not my thinking. So thinking comes and goes. And not having so strongly identified with it makes it easier. So it's a process. Everybody's, you know, at their own pace, getting it done. But sitting works. That's all I know. It works. But so does walking, you know, so does eating, sleeping. It all works when you're working it. But yeah, I'd be happy to talk about technique.
Thank you.
Thank you, Fran. Thank you.